in order to do this Chazara shir, I had to give up on doing Chazara for my introductory shir when we did the overview in the beginning of the year of Ribbis, because it just won't fit in the hour. And that was just an overview shir. In any case, and we ended up covering many of those topics in greater depth in the last several months, or, God willing, we will cover them in the opening months of the coming year. But I reorganized the shiurim, as you see on the outline, trying to help it fit into a better structure. In other words, we did it during the year in the order of the Gemara, based on when topics came up in the Gemara. But that's not necessarily the best way to learn a topic. So for review, at least, I felt I should restructure. So what you have here is, the first topic will be the status of a loan for which ribbis is not a guaranteed result, calling into question the whole idea of ribbis kitsutza, and the idea that ribbis is only a biblical violation in the event that it's set from the beginning. What if the result is not guaranteed? Then we'll move into particular types of ribbis, the status of interest on a late payment for a purchase, as opposed to late repayment of a loan. The issue of late fees, rather than interest payments, the differences between them, and so on. And then moving from that into the question of lending materials, sa'ah b'sa'ah, which can fluctuate in value, and therefore there could be a ribbis result. And then finally, the after-the-fact question of what do you do once a loan with ribbis has been extended? Now where do you go? What do you do? So we have an hour to review this. Clearly, I'm not going through all the topics that we discussed in subtopics, just some highlights. So we begin the status of a loan for which ribbis is not a guaranteed result, what we call tzad echad beribbis, meaning there are two possible resolutions, one of which will lead to interest, one of which will not. So the d'oraisa form of ribbis, the biblical form, is what I said in the beginning, which is ribbis kitsutza, where ribbis is agreed to from the start. So there are two ways in which you could have a loan which may come to ribbis and which may not come to ribbis. The first, and the simplest, is simpler of the two, is where ribbis might or might not happen due to outside circumstances. One example of this is Rashi and Samach Beis Amud Beis dealing with the Gemara and Dafayim Beis Amud Aleph, talking about where there is a loan. If you need a hard copy, you've got one more hard copy here. I think Jerry has an extra hard copy, possibly also. There. The case on Daf Ayin Beis was about a lender who uses produce that he gets from a field that he's holding, or an orchard that he's holding as collateral. So in other words, the lender is lending me money, he is holding my orchard as collateral, and he is going to eat out of the orchard as well as get payment when I repay him for the debt. So he's getting something extra. So Rashi brings that as an example of a case in which ribbis might happen or might not happen. There might be no produce in the orchard. Who knows? So that is avak ribbis. It's rabbinically prohibited. You're not allowed to do it, but it's not the biblical ribbis because you have no guarantee that it will happen. The Rambam similarly in Hachos Mal Vavaloba, Perak Vavalach Hazayin, it's avak ribbis. The more interesting category is where ribbis might or might not happen because of the actions of the lender or borrower. So two examples of this. We gave many more classes of this, but I'm going to give you just two examples. The first example is the Batei Arechoma example. The rule of Batei Arechoma says that a house in Israel in a walled city that is sold can be bought back for a year without any sort of penalty and without any right of refusal by the buyer. So in other words, I own a house, Ryan buys the house off of me, I come back 6 months later and I say I want to reverse the sale, here's your money back. There's absolutely nothing Ryan can do to prevent me from doing that. But what that means is that the money that was paid from the buyer to the seller during that year was actually a loan. And the money paid by the buyer to the seller was a loan. The seller is now paying back the loan when he refunds the money. And in addition, the buyer lived there for that period of time. So that means that he lent the seller money, he got back payment, and he also got the right to live in it. So because of the actions of the seller in reversing the sale, there is now a ribbis situation. However, when you originally made the purchase, there was no ribbis involved. That wasn't the term of the deal. It just happened. You follow? So it's tzad echad ribbis. One possibility is the sale is going to be reversed, and therefore there will be ribbis. A second example is a loan which could lead to an added benefit for the lender, right? The case in which I sell a field, I borrow money from Adam, and the terms of the loan, the terms of my borrowing the money from Adam involve giving him a field as collateral, and Adam likes the field so much that he says, here's another term, in the event that you ever sell this field, sell it to me at a discount. Well, I might never sell the field, in which case there was no ribis. However, if I do ever sell the field, I'm selling it to him at a discount, and now he will have benefited, now he will have gotten ribis. That's what we call tzad echad beribis. And the question is...
Why is it a discount? Without the discount, it's also like tzad echad beribis.
You mean because I give him something of value by the fact that he could pay for it.
You promise him that if you're going to sell the field, you're going to sell it to him.
But he's going to pay for it.
Yeah, without a discount,
it's not himself. אבל מה שמובא בגמרא שם, בסמכי עמוד בית, הוא כן, שהוא מוכר בדיסקאונט. So the answer on this, that's a machlokes tanoim. Bav mitzias hamakim alamad aleph. Rabbi Yehuda said this is okay. Tzarecha beribis. The Chacham said it's not okay. Why does Rabbi Yehuda think that this is okay if it could lead to ribis in the end? So Rashi explained it's because it's derech mechira, because this is really through a sale. However, as Tosos and others note, it's not necessarily a sale. You can come up with cases of tzarecha beribis that do not involve sale in the course of this in the course of the discussion. And in fact, like if you look at the Batei Arechoma case, it's dafka, there was no sale. That's what created the problem. You erased the sale. It was still via. There are better cases I could bring as an example, but again, this is just a quick review. The bottom line is, Tosos says the reason why that it's not the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is lenient is because it's not really kitzutza. It's not really ribis kitzutza, since the borrower or the lender could prevent the ribis from happening. It's not ribis kitzutza because the borrower or the lender could act to prevent the ribis from happening, depending on what your case is. That really doesn't explain why we should permit it altogether. That just means it's not ribis kitzutza. We have a whole bunch of types of ribis that are prohibited. Maybe it's a combination of the mechira and the non-kitzutza. In any case, we follow the chachamim. This is not okay. It is prohibited. Is it ribis kitzutza or avak ribis, though? Nafkamina would be, will a court reverse the payment, right? If it's ribis kitzutza, then the court is going to reverse it. If it's avak ribis, maybe not. That's something we have to discuss later on in the review. So the Rambam and Malvav Velova Perikvav Halacha Hey, the Rashba and Samach Zayin, the Rivash and Shin Hey, they all say this is ribis kitzutza. This is biblical ribis. Forget it. The fact that one of you could act in a way that would not lead to ribis doesn't matter. There are others who disagree, surprise, but the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodei Kufayim Dalet Aleph sides with the view that it is indeed ribis kitzusa. So don't do tzarecha beribis. That's moral number one out of our Chazara. Okay, number two. What is the status of interest on late payment for a purchase? Okay, meaning, I'm buying stuff off of Jeffrey, and I'm going to pay him late, and he says that's just fine, but there's going to be 1.99% interest on this. What is the status? So we've already established that ribis that comes about via a purchase, ribis derech mekach, is avak ribis. We talked about that back in the intro shir. Why? Either from psukim, or because of a logical argument. Either psukim, Rashi brings you the pasuk in Mishlei Perek Chaf Ches, mar behono b'neshech v'tarbis, which suggests that somehow it's mal behono, that that neshech and tarbit are specifically via a loan. Or the Chachmas Adam's much simpler thing, which is that the pasuk that talks about ribis is in kesef talve es ami. That's where it starts. It's about a loan, not ribis that comes about via a sale. Or the Ritva's approach, which is a logical approach. The Ritva says the reason why it's only avak ribis is because when it's done via a sale, the ribis is not clear from the start. Meaning everyone sees goods changed hands and I paid you something, and they don't know that I'm going to be paying you more later on. That's a very unclear thing. Therefore, it's not biblical ribis, it's avak ribis, the step down from biblical ribis. Okay, that's straightforward. So what is the status of interest on late payment for a purchase? How exactly should I look at it? And that's going to bring us to the discussion that we call Tarsha. And that's from Mishnah Daf Samachayim and Aleph. The Mishnah Samachayim and Aleph gives a basic case of ribis involving late payment on a purchase. It says that I am not allowed to be what's called marbe al hamecher, which means if Yaron sells me a field and he says to me, pay for the field now and it's $1,000. Pay for it at the time of the granary, whatever that's going to be, and it's $1,200. That's what the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. Please do not try this at home. Okay? That's what he says don't do. But then we get three Amoraim who comment on this in succession. And Rav Nachman says, Tarsha is fine. We explain Tarsha in a variety of ways. The way that Rav Nachman would seem to read Tarsha is that it means silent. And it's silent interest, because he says the problem with the Mishnah's case is specifically where the ribis is set. Cuts is the term, where the ribis is set. That's where we have a problem. But otherwise, if the ribis is not set, you're okay. We're going to come back to explain Rav Nachman more, but I want to go through the Gemara first. Rav Papa says, my Tarsha is fine. What does that mean? What's his Tarsha case? He says, I don't want to sell my goods right now at all. I have goods which are going to appreciate. They're going to go up in value over the next year. I don't plan on selling them until a year from now. However, someone comes to me and says, it's in my interest to buy it from you right now. Okay, I want to lock it in. I want to buy it right now. So I say back to him, okay, fine. But if you're going to buy it from me right now, then I'm going to want you to pay me what it's worth a year from now, because I don't want to lose what I could have gotten. I was planning on waiting, right? I'm a beer manufacturer. My beer is going to be just as good a year from now, and I'll get the year from now price, or the 6 month from now price. Why should I lose by selling it to you now? You pay me a year from now, and you'll pay me what it's worth then. That's Rav Papa's approach. As opposed to, if you pay me now, then I'll give you a discount, because now the market is lower. That's Rav Papa's case. We drop Rav Papa. We don't like Rav Papa's Tarsha. Rav Nachman's, we'll see, is a debate, but Rav Papa we don't like. Finally, Rav Chama. And Rav Chama's approach is to say, my Tarsha is definitely fine, and his is the most complex. But to explain it very briefly and simply, the buyer takes my goods to an expensive place, a place where they go at a higher rate. He sells them for me on my behalf. He uses the money from that sale for his own business while he's there, and he will benefit because having my name associated with the business deal is going to be to his advantage. He'll be exempt from various taxes, and people will treat him better because he's associated with me, with Rav Chama. And then when he comes back, he's going to pay me back based on the higher rate for that that he was able to get there. Okay, so what happens is, he doesn't buy the goods off of me, Rav Chama, right? I'm doing this deal with Chaim. So Chaim is doing the deal with Rav Chama. Chaim is going to only officially buy the, Chaim is only going to take possession of the goods at the end, when he's already there, and he already has the goods at the higher value. You follow? So what happens is, Chaim is taking delivery from me of goods that are worth $100. Okay? He's going to sell them for $150. He's going to use the $150 for his business to his advantage. And then he's going to come back to me and he's going to give me $150. It looks like ribis because he took goods that were $100 goods and he gave me back $150. However, the reason it's not, at least in part, we have to deal with this in greater depth, but the reason it's not, on the face of it, is because he only takes possession of those goods when he sells them on my behalf. So therefore, he only got from me $150 worth of goods. He didn't get $100 worth of goods. Until he got there, he was my agent. He was transporting my stuff, but he didn't actually own it. It wasn't actually lent to him at that stage. And we'll come back to this in a minute, but those are your three Tarshas. Rav Nachman is cuts, or not cuts. Rav Papa is the one who says, well, I'm not making the deal, I'm helping him out, and so I want to get the price that I would have gotten had I kept it. And Rav Chama, who does this complicated agency issue. Let's go back to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says you're fine as long as it is low cuts. So Rashi explains low cuts to mean that you only name the later price, not the early one. So I sell Pesach goods. Okay, I sell a Pesach. I'm selling you a car. You don't have to pay for me, you don't have to pay for the car for another year. And in a year, you're gonna pay me $25,000. Happens to be that if Pesach were paying up front, it would be worth 20. But neither he nor I say that. So I did not specify the increase that's going on. And that's what Rav Nachman says is fine. That's the deal. The Gaonim, as quoted by the Ramban, have a different explanation of Kavlo Katz. They say it's that the later price is not fixed. So I say to Pesach, you'll pay me in 6 months whatever this car is worth in 6 months. We don't specify what it's going to be. But don't worry about the view of the Gaonim and the Ramban. This is not the 3 weeks that we spent learning this in Shir. Rather, this is a Chazara, and therefore I'm just telling you we follow Rashi. Low cuts, Rav Nachman's version, means you only name the later price, not the earlier one. And the logic is, as explained by the Rashba, that the Ribbis is then unclear. It's not obvious, because we don't know what you would have had to pay if you paid now. It's done in the style of a purchase, so it's rabbinic in the first place. And, as the Rashba notes, Shalom Tinol Delas, we don't want to prevent commerce from taking place. In the event that you're going to tell me you can't do this, then it's going to really squelch commerce, because everyone's going to end up having to pay for things on time. This allows for people being able to buy something large now and pay later. There is a machlokes as to whether we accept Rav Nachman. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch do, and they work, as I said, with Rashi's definition of cuts, that you don't mention the early price. We discussed some implementation issues on this. So, for example, if you make the early price known indirectly or non-verbally, that's still a problem. So I can't put an ad in the paper saying it's $20,000 to buy this car today, and when someone walks in, say to him, it's $25,000 if you pay in 6 months. That's no good. I have broadcast the information of today's price. It's also cuts if everybody knows the current price. If these are goods that everybody buys all the time, then they know what the current price is, even without me saying it. Also, if the later price is obviously above what you would have to pay now, it's so clearly outsized as a price that it's obvious that this is what's going on, that's also a cuts problem. That's Rav Nachman. And as I said, we accept Rav Nachman. This is actually a way to deal with increased prices later on. Just don't mention the upfront price. Now, Rav Chama's Tarsha is fundamentally a case of a hybrid investment and loan. It's an investment in that you send the merchandise, which is currently worth X, and you is me in this case. Let me say it myself, okay? I am sending merchandise with Chaim. The merchandise is now worth X, and I'm going to get back from Chaim X plus. It's also a loan. It's just that they're sequential. At the moment that Chaim sells the goods, I am lending him the X plus value that he got for it, and he's going to pay it back to me later on. So we established from various passages of Gemara that you need to take care of certain details if you're going to play this game. Specifically, as I already stated, I have to retain responsibility for the goods until he reaches the point where he sells them. Because if he is going to be responsible for the goods en route, then he is giving me something extra. Right? He's borrowing the X plus that he got for it, the 150, and he's paying me back 150 plus the responsibility he took for my goods, which, to go back to Yerod's point before, has a value. Normally, if someone's going to take my stuff and take responsibility for it from point A to point B, I have to pay them in order to do that. So I can't have that. I have to accept responsibility for it, and I can't even necessarily pay him to accept responsibility for it, because it looks too much like a loan at this point if he's really going to be responsible for it. That was a side note in the shir. The other thing, though, that we have to watch out for is Chaim is doing work for me. He's transporting the goods from point A to point B. If I had sold them here, I never would have gotten $150. So Chaim actually did work on my behalf, and therefore I have to compensate him for that. So what's compensation here? So Rashi and Tosus explain that's the benefit of him being able to use my name when he engages in business. The fact that he's doing business under my name is going to help him get out of certain tariffs. It's going to help him with finding buyers and getting out in the market. So as a result, Chaim benefits. So that's his schar tircha. That's his payment for the work that he invested. Clear? I mean, as clear as a Chazar is going to get. And then we talked about how this leads into Heter Iska, right? If you make the loan and the Pikadon simultaneous rather than sequential, right? The Iska case is where, as Rabbi Zirik explained when he gave Shir, I am going to give you an amount of money, which is 50% a loan to you and 50% an asset that you're investing on my behalf. So now it's simultaneous instead of sequential. And also, in that case, there is no merchandise. There's only money. Here, we're talking about him taking merchandise to sell and so on. In that case, I just give him cash. And we just call half of it a loan and half of it a pikadon, and then everything plays out from there, as we discussed under Heter Iska. But that's the basic idea of Tarsha. So the status of interest on late payment for a purchase, we end up saying, as Rav Nachman says, if you didn't specify that this is interest, and you didn't specify there was an upfront price, you just say, here's your price for paying me in 6 months, you're good. That's Rav Nachman's way to deal with it. And then we have, as an outgrowth, the discussion of Rav Chama's way of dealing with things, in which you make it first an investment, I'm sorry, first a pikadon, and then it turns into a loan later on, and you just have to make sure that you compensate him so that your agent for managing this does not end up giving the lender more than he received. Okay. Late fees. So we spent we only did 1 week. Did I do only 1 week on late fees?
Two.
I did 2 weeks on late fees. That makes more sense. I don't do 1 week on something. So the status of a late fee for failure to pay on time. So we had three passages of Mishnah / Gemara that indicated that you are in fact allowed to restructure your loan so that instead of interest payments, there are late fees. We had the Mishnah that said the following case. I lend money to Jerry, and I say to Jerry, here's the collateral that I'm holding of yours. If you don't pay me back within 3 years, I get to keep the collateral, and you still have to repay me the debt. Right? The payment as well has to happen. So because I am now getting the collateral as well as the repayment, clearly I'm getting ribis. And yet, this is okay, and Baitus Ben Zonin did this. Al pi chachamim. Go figure. We had the second case was the Gemara Bava Basra Kuf Samaches, in which you have a debtor who pays off part of his debt, can't afford to pay the whole thing yet, and he pledges, if I don't pay you on time, then I will forgive everything I already paid you back, and I'll repay you for the entire debt later on. And the Gemara is a machlokas about asmachta, but it doesn't care about ribis. This was a late fee. You forfeit everything you paid back until now. And then we had the third case was the Mishnah in Ksuvos, where we said that a woman brings in 1,000 dinar of items into the marriage, and the man puts a condition in the Ksuva saying, in the event of his death or in the event of divorce, he will pay her back 1,500. So she's lending him 1,000 and getting back 1,500. So why in the world is this okay? So the logic behind permitting this, as explained by the Rashba in numerous places, quoting the Rimagash, is that there's a fundamental difference between ribis and late fees. Ribis means, as we said over and over in the Gemara, agar natar lei, right? Payment for waiting. Payment for being able to hold the money longer. The borrower can hold the lender's money longer if he will pay for that extra time. That's what ribis is, implying, or even explying, really, that there is an extension of the period of the loan as a result of the ribis payment. You paid me on the 30th. You paid me $1,000 in order to be able to hold it till the 30th day of the next month, and so on down the line. The late fee does not buy you any extra time. The late fee is automatic. Meaning, the loan came due on July 1. You didn't pay me. You owe me X number of dollars. However, at the same time that I'm coming to you with this, the Beis Din is coming in to claim the loan from your property. You didn't get an extra time for it. It's just a penalty. It's a punishment because you didn't pay me on time. That's the idea of the Rimagash, as brought also in the Rashba. And the Rashba says this heter is specifically talking about where it is intended as a harama. You're playing games. Nonetheless, it's allowed. Now, there may be reason to specify that the knas is acquired me'achsha from the beginning of the loan, both to avoid asmatha considerations as well as to avoid the appearance of extending the loan with this payment. Now, we have three objections to this whole idea. Number one objection was fundamentally this is ribis mi'ucheres. Fundamentally, the lender is getting extra money this way, right? You can't ignore the fact that the lender is getting extra money. We said that if I lend you money, right, and you decide afterwards you're going to give me a gift, That's a ribbis problem. So why isn't this a ribbis problem as well? Even though when you give me the gift, when you repay it, it didn't buy you extra time, it's still prohibited. So why isn't this a ribbis mulcheres problem? The second problem is this is haramas ribbis. It's clearly a joke. You're doing this just in order to get around the problem of ribbis. And then you have the chavas das that Yaron predicted before, who says that even agreeing to a late fee condition has value to it. You've given me something of monetary value by agreeing to pay a late fee. And as a result, almost everybody involved in this says, no, you can't really do this. The Rashba, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, they don't like this idea at all, of ribbis as a late fee. However, we come up with four heterim, three of which come from those cases in the Gemara that seem to accept derech knas. Heter number one is that it's a mashkon involved. You're forgiving a mashkon. A collateral. And why is that better? So the Shach explains, because then the value of the mashkon is not set from the time of the original loan. Not the value of the mashkon. The agreement to forfeit it is not set from the time of the original loan. What happened was, we did the loan, and then I said later on, if I don't pay you on time, then I will forfeit it, so it's not set from the beginning of the loan. And the Shach added that land may be particularly lenient because it has no set value. And therefore, it's not so obvious that there's ribbis. So that's one possible answer.
Where do you put shava kesef instead of a vaz or something like that?
Like a vaz is shava kesef. What do you mean?
No, for example, some people pledge security, they get bonds.
You mean shava kesef? You mean kesef? So then I think you gain what the first shach said, you lose what the second shach said.
Right.
Yeah. The second heter is, if, and this really may include the mashkon point, if the arrangement for the fine is not, or the late fee, is not set from the time of the loan in general, this is really your case. It's not a mashkon anymore that we're talking about, but just in general, it wasn't set from the beginning. The third leniency would be if you're dealing with different media, meaning that the loan was money and the repayment was peros, was produce, or vice versa. And again, that comes out of the fact that it was allowed in the Mashko case. All of these three heterim are based on the fact that I have a Mishnah that says that Baikus Ben Zonim was able to play this game and the Chachamim were fine with it. So we're just looking at that case and trying to figure out why that case should be okay. And those are three approaches. And then the fourth approach is to say, as long as it's in the way of selling merchandise, you're good. As long as it's a part of a sale of merchandise, not a standard loan, you'll be okay. That does not emerge from the cases in the Gemara, but that's just a fourth logical approach, and that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and Yeridei Kufayin Zayin Yerches. I think I gave you on the sheet various references to where you can find these discussed. I didn't just put the outline. So that led us to the last case of late fees, the really innovative case. Can you have multiple deadlines with new fines along the way? Right? Not where I say, if the loan is due July 1st and you don't pay me July 1st, you have to pay me an extra $1,000. No, 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 no. We're going to do this for real. Or for fake, depending on how you look at it. And I'm going to say, your loan is due July 1st. In the event that you don't pay me July 1st, you have to pay me 2% of the value of the loan. Then if you haven't paid me by August 1st, you have to pay me another 2% of the value of the loan. And then if you haven't paid me by September 1st, 2% of the value of the loan. So it looks just like ribbis. You're paying a certain percentage every month, and you're able to keep on holding the money. He's not coming after you for the money. Now the argument, so first of all, the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch seem to say this is completely out. Nonetheless, the Mordechai, Nagos Mordechai, has a document from Rabbi Yaakov Meir Orleon in which he actually did this. A set penalty, a gift of X amount for each week that the payment is late. That's the idea. The poskim in general thought that this document was too bizarre to be believed. You can't really do this. Only the Mabit came up with a justification, as we saw. It's very hard to justify this, even if letter of the law, you structure it so that it's a late fee, and theoretically you could get the Beis Din to go into his property when he misses the July 1st deadline, but you don't because you're very happy to claim 2% a month. The reality is that this is a game. This is a game. It's a very clear harama. It barely has a fig leaf on it. And therefore, we don't like this idea.
It seems like it's trying to circumvent the Agar Nafa, like it's not a linear,
yeah,
continuous thing, but it's got it's a step function.
Right. So
on day one of the month, the whole thing is due.
So that's exactly right.
Day 30, you're fine. They go to day 31. It's the first thing. They're like, oh, I get it.
Right. So actually, that's the that's the justification. The justification that's brought is that this is a series of loans.
Right.
Each month is a brand new loan, effectively, instead of an extension of the preceding one. It's a legal fiction, but it amounts to
it. Okay. One thing that you can also rely on is like if a guy loans money for another guy and he refuses to pay, and he goes to a court.
Yeah.
And then the court gives like a bid. And because it's Dina de Malchuta.
Right, if you're going to accept, and that's the whole discussion about the pre-judgment and post-judgment interest discussions, which you looked into. Correct. Okay. What's the status of a loan of materials, which could fluctuate in value, right? Borrowing the bottle of ketchup. I go over to Ryan's house. I say, listen, we need some ketchup. So I'd like to borrow some ketchup from you. Bless you. At the time that I happen to borrow the ketchup from him, bottles of ketchup are worth $1.99. Then I come back to repay him 2 weeks later, but a bottle of ketchup has gone up in value. Now it's worth $2.50. So I have borrowed $1.99. I paid him back $2.50. That's not that. That would seem to be a problem. That's the problem of sa'a b'sa'a. And it's even sort of a kitsutsa. It's sort of fixed because you did fix it. You said you pay me back a bottle of ketchup, whatever it happens to be worth. It may go up in value, like we talked about in the beginning, through circumstances beyond your control. It may go up in value. So the core source for this was the Mishnah and the Gemara Nayin Hey Amid Aleph, which has the prohibition against lending a kur in exchange for a kur. A kur is a dry volume, or it's a volume measure at any rate, dry volume generally. And it says you're not allowed to lend a kur for a kur unless you're dealing with particular circumstances, like you have the stuff in your warehouse to pay back right now, you just don't have the key available, or your son is going to bring it for you. Otherwise, you were not allowed to do this. And Tosfos says it applies even to items that do not normally appreciate in value. Rav Safran, Samach Beis Amid Aleph, includes Sa'ab Bissa'ah as a case of Avak Ribis. He says it's not Ribis Kitsutsa. So again, if we had more time, we would do this as a back and forth in terms of why it's not Ribis Kitsutsa. But now I'll just tell you three different views. One reason why it's not Ribis Kitsutsa, says the Rush, is because the borrower gives back nothing extra. Right? It's worth more, but it's a bottle of ketchup. At the end of the day, it's still a bottle of ketchup. That's one explanation. Ramban's approach is because we evaluate it based on its worth based on the worth of the promised payment at the time the loan is extended. Meaning, we look at it based on what the ketchup was worth when the loan was actually extended. Basar Meikara. And in the beginning, it was worth $1.99. So that's really what you're giving him, is a bottle of ketchup that was worth $1.99 back in the beginning. And then the Taz has a different approach. The Taz says it's because you could just as easily lose. Right? When I lent Ryan, I borrowed from Ryan, right? I borrowed from Ryan a bottle of ketchup that was worth $1.99. It's entirely possible that ketchup goes on sale.
So it's not a loan.
Right? And no, it is a loan. But ketchup could go on sale, and in that case, the replacement ketchup could be 99 cents. Right, Ryan thought he was going to get a $2.50 bottle of ketchup from me next week. He's actually getting a 99-cent bottle of ketchup. It's always a loan.
So then why is it permitted?
Wait. We did not permit it. We said it's not Ribis Kitsutsa. That's all we said. We did not permit it. We said Sa'abasa is not allowed. Now, since this may not actually lead to Ribis, at what point are you in violation of the law? Right? After all, I could end up giving him back a 99-cent bottle of ketchup, not a $2.50 bottle of ketchup. So I can't. It's hard to say we're in violation at the moment that he gives me a $1.99 bottle of ketchup. It may not even lead to ribis. The language of the Gemara, though, as brought in the Shulchan Aruch, is that the Isser is, in fact, at the time of the loan. Extending a loan of a commodity is also prohibited at the time that you extend the loan. There was a Ramban that was difficult, but basically that's the universal approach. Yes, Chaim?
But if it's based on the exact same quantity, the exact same dry good, whatever it is,
yeah,
then both sides are agreeing. There is no other answer. Both people are agreeing from the outset that that's not even part of the equation here.
But no, the fact that you are able to hold my ketchup for 2 weeks is because I'm expecting to get, ketchup that's worth more at the end. That would be the response.
That's only if you have an expectation for the price to rise.
Correct, and that's why we argue it's not Kitsutsa, right? The argument that you're bringing is a justification for it not being Ribis Kitsutsa, because there's no guarantee that I'm going to get more for it. But there's a possibility of it.
It's not even anyone's mind if you're agreeing to the same idea. The idea is that both people from the outset are saying you want to make this equal,
right? No, I understand, and that's why this isn't a deraisa. But it doesn't make it okay. We're going to get to what makes it okay. Yeah.
This might be the
then let's hold it because it's Chazar Ashir. Okay, thank you. I apologize, but yeah, I got 24 minutes to go. So there are four ways to enable Sa'ab B'Sa'ah halachically. Your first approach is avoid this scenario, which is by making it into money instead. Instead of Ryan saying to me, I'm lending you a bottle of ketchup to a chiner, he'll say, I am lending you $1.99 worth of ketchup. And then I, when I get to pay him back, have to pay him back $1.99 worth of ketchup. If ketchup goes up to $2.50, then we have to, you know, calculate from the bottle how much is worth $1.99. Now, that could lead to a very odd circumstance. If we're actually going to do that, then if ketchup goes up in value, goes down in value, what's Ryan going to get back from me? Right? Let's do round numbers. Instead of $1.99, it's a $2 bottle of ketchup when Ryan lends it to me. Right? He says to me, I am lending you $2 worth of ketchup. Ketchup goes on sale. It's now $1. Right? So now I have to give him two bottles of ketchup. In order to avoid ribbis, I have to give him back two bottles of ketchup for the one that he gave me. So Machaneh Ephraim is like scratching his head. Like, really? So the question of mechila and whether mechila is okay goes back to the mechila is okay in ribbis in general, right? We don't like ribbis. If I give him less, then yeah, that's true. He can be mochel. But most say, in fact, most poskim say that I would be required to pay him back two bottles of ketchup for the one. No, we're going back to here. That's the first hat there, is turn it into money. The second hat there is what's called davar muat. Based on the way that almost everyone reads the Gemara, other than the Beis Yosef explaining how the Rif read the Gemara, and the way to read it is that Hillel there on Ayin Hay says that a woman is allowed to lend a roll, stam, and the Gemara disagrees and says lovin stam upor in stam. So without going into the ins and outs of the text and how to read it, the bottom line is that it seems okay to lend a roll, somebody's homemade roll. That will be okay. And the reason why it's okay is because it's a small amount. Why does small amount matter? So there are at least three views for why small amount matters. The Baal HaMor brings a view, as does the Meiri, that it's because we consider it as though the borrower had another one of them available to pay back, which is going to be the next heter, the Yeshlo heter. We consider it as though he had it already on hand to pay back. Since it's small, you could easily get it, and we consider it as though you have it, and that's going to work because of the next heter that I haven't explained yet. The Ravid, on the other hand, quoted in the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, say the reason why is simple. People aren't makbid. If we're dealing with small items to begin with, whatever fluctuation you're going to have is going to be small as well. That's the assumption. And therefore, people don't care. That would be a second approach. And then the third approach, also brought in the Baal HaMor, is that when you're dealing with small amounts that are only borrowed for brief periods of time, he assumes it's borrowed for a brief period of time, we don't worry, the price is going to change. Realistically, how much is this, not how much, is it going to change at all? Practical distinction between these three answers is, what if it does go up in value? If you take the third view, then you can't pay back the increase in value. If you say it's because people aren't mocked, but then you're okay. That's the difference. Jerry, is this on this?
Yes, the word ribbis has rav in it, which is a lot.
Maybe. Yeshlo is the third heter. The third heter is Yeshlo. Which is the idea seen in the Gemara on Daf Ben Dalam and Beis, based on the Ashiyavo Bini, until my son shows up. The Gemara on Daf Ben Dalam and Beis is a case in which Rav borrowed gold coins from the daughter of Rabbi Chiya, and then the coins went up in value. And Rabbi Chiya says to him, you better pay her back good gold coins. What do you mean? Why isn't that ribbis? Why isn't that Sa'ab B'Sa'ah, in fact? Why was he allowed to take out this loan in the first place? The whole point there is that gold coins are a commodity and not a currency. So the answer to that, the reason why it's okay, as explained by the Gedulei Truma and as seen in Rashi, is that if the borrower possesses the commodity already, then the lender acquires that substitute, the payment, now. And if it goes up in value, it goes up in his possession. Effectively, what this means is that it's a barter. It's not a loan. You follow? That's the idea. So, in the case that Moshe lends me a chair, not a chair, because a chair you don't spend. Moshe lends me a bottle of ketchup, and I have a bottle of ketchup. It's just locked away. So in that case, he acquired the bottle of ketchup. That's payment in the beginning, and therefore if ketchup goes up in value, it went up in value in his possession. It was already his, so to speak. I say so to speak, because if God forbid something happened to my bottle of ketchup, I would have to replace it. I can't say, well, it was really yours. So, you're out of bottle of ketchup. It doesn't work that way. What defines yeshlo? So we had a lot of discussion about this. I have to, as the borrower, I have to own the item at the time of the loan. It doesn't have to be present. It has to be accessible to me. And I can dispose of it right afterwards, because you didn't really acquire that bottle of ketchup. I need not have the entire item. Even if I just have some of it, that's sufficient. We had a machlokas, we showed him as to how that works. Is it because we say that it's as though you acquired my sum of it opposite each element of yours, or is it because we compound the loan? Like, let's say I borrowed 100 bottles of ketchup and I only had one. So I borrowed one from you, now I have two. So now I borrow two more from you, now I have four. Now I borrow four more from you, and now I have eight, and so on down the line. That's a machlokas with practical implications, believe it or not, in terms of how we do the loan. And the Shulchan Aruch even thinks that the lender is allowed to give the borrower an item to use against the loan. So in other words, Moshe has two bottles of ketchup, I don't have any. He's going to lend me one, but first he's going to give me one as a gift, and that will be mine, that will be against the loan that he's now going to give me. The Shulchan Aruch says we're fine with that. And the general rule in the whole of Sa'a B'Sa'a is that this is such an odd extension, as Chaim noted in the beginning of this topic, it's such an odd extension of the laws of Ribbis that we're pretty makil on things. The Taz has the best kula of all, but no one listens to him. The Taz says that all I need is the money such that I could have bought such an item, and that's good enough. All I need is the money now. So in other words, combining this with the idea that I only need a percentage, right? If I have a dime, then that's already good enough, because I could have bought some ketchup with a dime, and that would have been opposite the bottle of ketchup that you're giving me. But as Rabbi Reisman notes in Laws of Ribbis, if you were to do this, you could just throw out all the laws of Sa'a B'Sa'a. At this point, it's over. But okay. The last heter for this is Yatzah Hashar, where the price is already known. This comes from a Gemara in Beis and Beis regarding Poskin al Haperos, where they discuss paying for future produce. So you're lending the owner of the produce the money, and we say that's okay once the shar is set, once the going rate is set for whatever this item is. We have three different justifications for doing this. The Beis Yosef, based on Rashi, says it's because we consider it as though the borrower had the goods already for paying back because the shahr is out. So in other words, it's a lot like Yeshlo. Since there's a price, a set price for it, now he could get it. And maybe that's what feeds into the Taz, I don't know. The Shahr Deya floats the idea that the permission is, that the reason why this works is because since there is a going rate, I could buy and pay back now and therefore avoid Ribbis ever happening. I could have paid you back right now, since there's a shahr, since there's a set price. The Meiri gives another answer. The Meiri says it works because since there is a going rate, we expect it to remain stable. And therefore there's no intent for Ribbis in the course of this. Since there's a going rate, we assume the price is not going to change. Nafkamina between these would be, what if there's no set price but the product is available easily? So the Beis Yosef and the Shahr Deya are fine, right? Because their point was you could avoid Ribbis, right? Whereas the Meiri's idea that you have a going rate and that we expect to remain stable will not apply if there is no going rate. It's just the product is available. We also discussed what Yatzah Hashar looks like. Yatzah Hashar, there's a set price, means a range of prices. It doesn't have to be literally that it's Toronto gas stations. But a range of prices is okay in the place where the locals normally shop. That doesn't have to be right here. It could be there's another town that has many stores and a big market that everybody goes to. If there's a set price there, that's sufficient. There's a lot of debate regarding a price that fluctuates a lot, whether that's also called Yatzah Hashar. We discussed that in terms of investments. Also, for all of the heterim involved for Sa'a B'Sa'a, we require that the deal be what we call Karov L'Sachar L'Hefzid, that you could lose or gain. Meaning, the Rivash says, you can't have a guarantee. Guarantee would look like this. Rabbi Ziering is going to lend me a bottle of ketchup and say to me, you're either giving me back a bottle of ketchup or $1.99 at my discretion. That you can't do, because what's he going to do?
If the bottle of ketchup goes down in value, he's going to demand $1.99. If the bottle of ketchup goes up in value, he's going to demand a bottle of ketchup. Right? And that way he's insulated against loss. That's no good. The insulation against loss, where you can only gain, that's already ribbis territory. We don't like that. Okay.
The Meiri, and also the way you define Yetzer Hashar here, but that would go against what we did on now, where we said today there is no surface. So you kind of have your cake and eat it too.
Right, so that's a problem across topics of how you define Shar.
Yeah.
What we're willing to accept as Shar. This is true. The cross-disciplinary issue. Okay, so now we've talked about the status of a loan when ribbis is not a guaranteed result. The tzadech of ribbis. In general, we are not fans of this. We talked about the status of interest on late payment for a purchase and of Nachman's Tarsha and came up with ways to do that. We talked about late fees and noted ways in which you could do a late fee, at least if you're dealing with land, forfeiting a mashko, not from the time of the thing, of the time of the loan. And the status of a loan of materials. Right? Loans of materials, so you could potentially do it if you follow one of our heterim. Last piece. After the fact, what do you do once a loan with ribbis has been extended? So if nothing has been collected yet, then the answer is tear up the document. The Tosefta above Mitzia Perek Hey says tear up the document. It's also found in the Gemara and it's found in the Rambam. Why am I tearing up the document? Two explanations. Either the Rama's view, you tear it up because you don't want the lender to claim ribbis. Or, the Beis Yosef's view, we're concerned that the Beis Din is going to say this document is entirely no good and will not allow him to claim even the keren. Meaning, he lent me $1,000 and he charged me $10 interest. The Beis Din is going to look at the document and say, wait, there's interest in there. They're going to tear up the whole thing. That's not the halacha. The halacha is he's allowed to claim $1,000 from me. So we tear up this document and have him write a new document that just has $1,000 for the keren. And that way he'll be able to claim that, or not write a new document. He said claim from the witnesses. Right? Let him bring his witnesses and use them to claim the keren. Because the witnesses to the loan know that, in fact, it was a loan of $1,000. That was how we did it. The what about if the ribbis has already been collected? Now what do you do? So we have a concept of refunding the ribbis. That was Samach Aleph on the base, Samach Beis on the Aleph, Machlokas, Rebbe Lazar, and Rebbe Yochanan on ribbis kitzutza. Rebbe Lazar says that ribbis kitzutza, the bona fide biblical ribbis established from the beginning of the loan that you're paying the extra, Rebbe Lazar says, Yotze Bedayan, and judges have to go after him and demand the money back. Rebbe Yochanan says no. He says you don't refund it, and we had a series of sources to support that. Rabbi Yitzchak said the pasuk in Yechezkel that associates lending with interest with murder. So murder is punished by death, not by repaying. Right? So therefore, that's how you have to solve a ribbis problem. Ravada Brava quoted it because the pasuk is via Reisa Me'elokecha. You have to have reverence for God. Doesn't say anything about paying back. Rava also associated it with the pasuk in Yechezkel about Misa, Mos, Yumas, Damav, Bo. He says a murderer doesn't pay. Crime doesn't pay also. That's a separate discussion. So Rabbi Yochanan says you don't refund the ribbis. Rabbi Lazar disagreed. The pasuk says, V'chei achicha imach, your brother's life shall be with you. Indicating that you give it back to him, give it back to your brother so that he will live. So that's the view of Nachman Yitzchak, and indeed we follow Rabbi Elazar on that basis, who says that if there's bona fide biblical ribbis, the lender is obligated to pay back the borrower. That's the principle. Now, why is he paying back? So there were two different views to explain how to view this repayment. One view is the Rashba and the Ran. They say it's a separate mitzvah. It's not about refunding stolen money. It's actually a separate mitzvah that if you charge somebody ribbis, you have to pay him back. But until you pay him back, that means the money belongs to the lender. Right? He just has a mitzvah, I'll pay it back. In other words, is there anybody I didn't name yet? Oh, there are a few. Pesach, okay. So Pesach lent Jeffrey $1,000, right? And charged him $10,000 interest. Jeffrey paid it up. Pesach has an obligation to pay back Jeffrey the $10,000. However, it's Pesach's money until the moment that he gives it to Jeffrey. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, the Beis Shmuel brings it, the Mishnah Lamelech brings it from Rabbeinu Yerucham, is that the lender never acquired the ribbis paid to him. Pesach didn't have a right to the $10,000. That's Jeffrey's money all along. And there are plenty of practical applications to which side you take on this. The nafkaminas are real. For example, can Beis Din go into Pesach's money, Pesach's property, to get the $10,000? If he's holding Jeffrey's money, you bet. If it's a separate mitzvah for him, less clear. We have a concept of forcing people to pay to fulfill an assay, but it's less clear that they could go into Pesach's property and claim it. Another nafkamina, let's say Jeffrey is mochel. Jeffrey says, I don't want it back. If it's his money, he's entitled to do that. If Pesach has a mitzvah of give Jeffrey $10,000, Jeffrey can't be mochel on his mitzvah. It's his mitzvah. So there's that application. Heirs of a lender, are the heirs obligated to repay it? If the money really is stolen money, then yes. If it was their father's mitzvah, then no. So it matters which way you go with this. Even when the court does not refund ribis, even in a case that's not ribis kitsutsa, there may be an obligation to repay latzeis yedei shamayim in order to satisfy God. The Vilna Gaon says that the Rambam believes that there is an obligation of latzeis yedei shamayim when you're dealing with avak ribis, when you're dealing with rabbinic ribis. The Gemara Bav Metzia Daf Samach Hei talks about the case of Hilvahu v'dor b'chatzero, the case in which you lend somebody money and you live in his yard. And it says that you're obligated, you, the lender, who is also the tenant, is obligated to pay rent at the end of the period of the loan. The Rambam says that that's avak ribis if you don't pay rent. Meaning you just got to live in the guy's property while he borrowed money from you. That's avak ribis. So the Vilna Gaon assumes that the Rambam is taking this Gemara to mean that your obligation to pay is latzeis yedei shamayim. That's your duty to pay for the rent. Because it's avak ribis. It's not ribis kitsutsa. So what this means is, that the Gemara is telling me that a person who lives in somebody else's property after lending him money must pay him for avak ribis. Not ribis kitsutsa. This is avak. And that tells me that there is a spiritual obligation to satisfy God. You are obligated to pay for avak ribis. We discussed a little bit the question of how real an obligation, let's say, yedei shamayim really is. Meaning, do I look at this then and say that turns lending with interest into a lav hanita klase? Right? A lav hanita klase, a prohibition which is cut off by a mitzvah. So is my obligation to pay, let's say, yedei shamayim, like a mitzvah sase, or not, because it's only latzeis yedei shamayim, Beis Din can't compel me to do it. So in the end, the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch say there is indeed latzeis yedei shamayim, you are obligated to pay back your avak ribis. Presumably it says it because the Rambam does. What about the lowest level of ribis? Ribis mi'ucheres. Ribis mi'ucheres, the case of the spontaneous gift. Right, Adam lends me money. I say to him, "Here's your money back, and you were so nice. Here's a USB key, because I'm grateful." Or I just say to him, "I'm going to get up in the morning, and with a group of singers, we're going to go to your door and say good morning, and that will be our nice payment for you, our gift to you, because you were so kind as to lend me money." So let's say we did that. Is there a latzeis yedei shamayim of paying back? Whether that means coming to my door to say good morning, please don't. Or whether we mean giving me a gift back, reversing the gift that was given. So here it's a different story. Because when you're dealing with ribis milcheres, there is mechila by the borrower. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the whole point. He wasn't obligated by the loan to do this. He chose to do it. So he was mochel. It's a gift. So therefore, it seems like there is no latzeis yedei shamayim. However, others disagree, including the Rush on our Gemara. They disagree because it's still mechzik ribis. It looks like ribis. If he shows up at my door, if he gives me a gift when he repays the loan, it sure looks like interest. And because of that, he would indeed have an obligation I would have an obligation, I should say, to reverse it and give it back to him. Jerry, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just wondering, what trumps the laws of ribis or masna mashakasu b'torah? Those rules.
You can't be masna mashakasu b'torah in order to create an obligation for ribis. You cannot say, in other words, I'm not allowed to say, I understand that the Torah says no ribis, however, I'm going to pay you back an extra 2%. That does not work. Yeah.
Mapirush. not like do mechila from the beginning.
Nachon.
Only
b'diyavad. Absolutely. Right, right.
Only if you did it, then you can be mocher.
Right. 100% true. The mechila would only be effective as a b'diyavad. I feel like I should have gone over the original shiur also, the introductory shiur. We have so much time remaining at the end. I don't know what to do with it.
When you say there's a special mitzvah for the lender.
Yeah.
So he did an avera by yes. lending money to Rebbe, and now it's like a mitzvah by the avera, sort of.
So whether we will literally call it mitzvah, whether you really call it a mitzvah via an aver will depend on what kind of ribbis it is, right?
No, by ribbis ketzutza.
Oh, by ribbis ketzutza.
By the rush, by the run, right? Explanation number
one. So it depends on Rabbi Ziering's shear, right? On the question of why you're not supposed to lend with interest in the first place. That will determine whether what you did is even considered to be a mitzvah of halva. No? Isn't that a potential application? You know, if you're going to tell me that what you're doing when you take interest is like gizela,
right?
Then it wasn't the mitzvah of halva in the first place. Whether I call it a mitzvah with an avera, you know, along the way or not, it will depend on how I understand it. I think so. I think that is correct. So that's a nutshell chazara for everything we did. As we have a few people here who actually weren't there.
There's Dion 9a in the Harman that deal with whether the Israel of Yigos is automatically triggered. I'm sorry, of the Israel of Kenosha is automatically triggered once you lend somebody Beribis from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in which case you lose.
In which case you lose the
or not. Right. Whether okay. it's, right. Rex Gemara there talks about a legitimate loan, not pressuring the person. Right, but what happens when it's an illegitimate loan from the beginning? Right, how does that trigger that prohibition?
Right, okay. So good. I'm just looking back at my notes from the opening shiur, and I thought I would grab something from it. The only thing I will note, which we're going to come back to in the shiurim after the Ben Hazmanim break, is that potentially some of the lower levels of ribbis may be justified if you're dealing with either a loan of hektish and tzedakah funds, which we talked about a little bit along the way. It came up povisham, as well as a loan that is for the sake of a mitzvah, chaburas mitzvah, a sudas kiddush hachodesh we gave from a Yerushalmi. They may actually be heterim for a tzarech mitzvah to do some of the cases that we think of as ribbis d'rabbanan. So that will come up as well. Good. Shkach. What was your point about the rav in?